friends, and welcome back to Cracked with Siobhan Aris. Before we jump into our interviews, I'd like to thank our sponsors. First up is Canfield Technologies. Why do glass artists ask for Canfield fluxes? Simple, they just work better. Canfield offers several fluxes that are formulated to work with tin-lead combinations as well as lead-free solders. Choose from their mild blue glass or Soleic to more aggressive SolderMate 11. For excellent results, always use Canfield fluxes. Find out more at canfieldmetals.com. I'd also like to thank Hovel Technologies, makers of Quick Clean Flux and Patina Cleaner. The Quick Clean solution is a liquid, not a gel. So for foil work, it goes under the foil in the air pockets where patina can be hiding and neutralizes the flux and patina. This is the area where white mold starts to form. For lead work, Quick Clean goes into the little pockets left in the putty and neutralizes any patina hiding there. And last, but definitely not least, thank you to Monarch Glass Studio. From there, Tyler Kimball's rondelles can be ordered in sizes ranging from 3 inches all the way to 27 inches. Design possibilities are endless with cane, incalmo, single color, flash, streaky frit, optic twist, optic wed, domed, CD, and many others are all possible variations on the rondelles. Their specialty is making what you need. Let them know what you need for your design to work and they'll make it happen. Have you found a rondelle in a piece that you would like to replicate? They can do that too. Find out more at monarchglassstudio.com or give them a call at 816-503-6326. I also want to chat with you guys real quick about the glass hack episode. I posted about it back in May and there was so much interest and excitement around it, but I haven't received enough to make an entire episode yet. But I'm hoping by the time season 4 rolls around, I'll be able to make it a reality. Please, don't be shy. I know you're sitting on a good glass hack. All I need you to do is to record a voice memo for me on your phone. Every smartphone has this feature. First, start with your name exactly how you want your identity shared publicly. This could be just your first name, first and last, your social media handle, or the whole kit and caboodle. Second is where you're from. Third, your glass hack. Please explain it thoroughly. This is tough sometimes without a visual, so think about what you want to say before you start. Writing it down first is always a great idea. Speak clearly and make sure you're recording in a very quiet space. Clothing closets are the best because they're not only quiet, but also so insulated with all of that fabric that there's no echo. And remember, you can record it as many times as you want before you send it. And finally, title your email glasshack-your name. Send it to hello@runaglassworks. After all that, don't forget to high-five yourself for helping us all become better and more efficient at our craft. When the water rises, all the boats rise with it. Now for today's interview. My guest is Jane Littlefield. Jane works with stained glass from her workshop in Great Longstone, Derbyshire. She studied fine art at Ravensburn College and has worked in different areas of design over the years. Jane works to commission and has produced work for homes, schools, and businesses. She also runs glass workshops. Her own work consists of stained glass panels that have multi-layered painted glass images that are inspired by the Peak District, its nature, history, and folklore. She's quoted as saying, "I use images of creatures, landscape features, and organic motifs to create the glass panels." Let's get into it. Join me as I crack it all wide open.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
Hi, I'm just going in the other side. I'm in my cupboard.
You're in the cupboard?
Yeah, that's where my computer is.
Thank you for joining this, for doing this.
It's very exciting. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, absolutely. You're the second person I've spoken to in Derby, but yours. Okay. So it says here that you are joining us from Great Longstone, Derbyshire. Is it Derbyshire or is it Derbyshire?
Derbyshire.
Yeah. And is that the same thing as Derby?
So Derbyshire is the county and okay. Derby is the main city in the county. So I know you I know you interviewed somebody else who lives in Derby. So that's about an hour away from where I live. And she lives in the city, in the countryside.
Okay. Is that where you're from?
No, no. I come from Ascot in Berkshire, which is near London. Quite a long way away. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have two daughters. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. I've got, I can't remember numbers, but one of them is about 26. I think she's her birthday next week, and one's about 28. Something okay. like that.
Do they live close?
One lives in London and one lives in Hull, which I don't know, is about an hour and a half away from here. So she's just been on holiday. She's just come back from India today, traveling around.
Wow.
So, yeah, looking forward to hearing about her experiences.
Yeah, definitely. And you and your husband are very much into cycling. Is that right? Is that still current to say?
Yeah. Oh, I haven't done very much recently, to be perfectly honest, but we do enjoy it. Yes, if we can. Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Your Instagram is sort of a mix between your glasswork and your travels. And a lot of it seems to be centered around your cycling.
Yeah. Well, where we live in the national park here, and it's quite hilly and it's very beautiful. So it's brilliant for cycling, walking, swimming, all those sorts of things. So I think, you know, living here, we don't come from here, but because we really enjoy doing all those things that are available, you know, just locally, because it is a beautiful landscape. And cycling's great, but you've got to be fit because it's hilly, and I'm just not so fit at the moment. You have to go up a massive hill to get out the village. So it's you've got to be on your game, really.
Right. Yeah. I just moved to Austin, Texas, but I was living in the Berkshires, which is in Western Massachusetts. And it's named after your area because it's supposed to be very similar in just the way that it looks. And
yeah. Well, apparently the Peak District isn't called the Peak District because of the peaks. It's because of the Peak Tribe or something. Oh. From, I don't know, from history, from the Bronze Age, I think, you know, settlers. Yeah. But it is pretty hilly, yes, for the UK.
It's gorgeous. Your photos are incredible that you've posted.
Oh, thank you.
So this is a stained glass podcast, so I suppose we should talk about glass.
Okay. Yeah.
Where did you learn how to do it?
So I just learned at evening class, actually. I when my kids were little, I took an evening class just in stained glass making, a bit of copper foiling, a bit of leading. And that was really what got me going. I just realized it was the thing I wanted to do quite early on, actually. So I carried on doing stained glass, this evening class, for maybe 6 months. And then I took it a bit further by going and doing some glass painting courses. And then I kind of quite quickly bought a small kiln and just got started doing it, sort of, you know, learning myself, teaching myself. Quite quickly realized it was what I wanted to do. And I don't know why that was particularly. But so just an evening class. So I did fine art at college, an art college in London. And I worked for a company. We made T-shirt designs. So we made these T-shirts and they had like big kind of graphic fine art prints on them. And I worked, it was my old tutor from college. So I worked in the sort of, you know, helping silkscreen print these T-shirts. I used to drive a little car around delivering them around London. But I also used, some of my designs were used on these T-shirts as well. So I did that for a while. And then I moved away from London and I worked for a psychiatric hospital doing graphic design, desktop publishing and patient information. So kind of working with different hospital professionals to design kind of graphic material, really. That was before I had I had some children, a couple of children quite close together, and took up the glass after that. So that was about early 2000.
And what was your relationship with stained glass before you took the class? Were you just like always a fan, or was it kind of just out of the blue?
Not really. It wasn't anything really. I was thinking about that earlier. It wasn't something really that I was into in any way, really. I've always liked making things and the craftsmanship of things, but I wasn't particularly keen at going and looking at stained glass or anything, actually. It just didn't even really occur to me. I think it was, you know, after doing printmaking, I think it was the surface design stuff that I really enjoyed, and something, I don't know what it was that clicked, but yeah, I got super interested in it quite quickly. But before that, I don't think I really had much to do with it at all.
Does your partner work in the arts as well?
No, he works in IT. He's completely the opposite to me. He has no interest, really. Well, that's cruel to say. He does have a bit of interest, but he's not particularly artistic or creative, no.
Just appreciates the stuff you make, I'm sure.
Kind of.
So when I look at your work, the colors, they're muted and soft. The illustrations are very whimsical, very sweet. And the shapes of your pieces and how you fragment them, it's very organic and intentionally irregular. But the lack of symmetry in your pieces, it feels very comforting for me.
Oh, really? That's interesting. I mean, it is all, I'm deliberately trying not to be, you know, with a stained glass is because it's very rigid, very square, very accurate. I'm not really any of those things. And I suppose what I'm trying to do is bring that sort of softness to it. So I'm trying to be kind of quite spontaneous with the imagery that I use, trying not to make everything always square or rectangular, thinking about different, more organic shapes. And trying to, you know, some of the things I've been trying to do is like combine the glass with, you know, different materials like wood and trying to make it all more organic and more natural. So yeah, that makes sense, really. It's yourself from making it, it is such a rigid medium, isn't it? You know, everything has got to be so precise. So I think it's just my way of interpreting that to make it more personal to me, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I love it. I love your work.
Thank you.
Speaking of sculpture, you did a collaboration with a friend named Andy Douglas a bit back where it was beechwood and glass, and the beechwood was sourced from the woodland in the Peak District by Andy's place, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. So my friend Andy has got a small piece of like a woodland not far from here, a couple of miles away. And he's really into like traditional ways of working with wood. So I think he's got I don't really know all the different tools, but I know he's got his own like a lathe that he's made himself. So he's using kind of handmade tools to work with his wood. So he's really interested in kind of cultivating this woodland and about using the material that he can get from it. And so I just always, again, I've seen a lot of stuff where artists have worked, you know, combined wood with glass, and again it's always very square and symmetrical, and so I just wanted to try and come up with something again a bit sort of softer and a bit more organic that felt more natural. So anyway, I badgered him for quite a long time and said, you know, we should do something, and in the end he succumbed and he brought this beautiful piece of beech, yes, that so we kind of worked together. I sort of said, well, you know, we could do maybe nice to have some round shapes in it rather than having it all, you know, following the shape of the piece of wood, really. And so we worked on it together and just came up with two pieces, which we sort of finished. And yeah, we're really pleased with them, actually. Yeah.
So there was only two made?
Only two, yes. Yeah. I mean, I think we have intentions to do more in the future, but you know, life gets in the way, doesn't it? Other things happen. But yes, we will get together.
And COVID just kind of put everything into a tailspin that you thought you were going to do next.
Yeah. Well, I in some ways it was really good for me, I think, COVID. It was a sort of, you know, everything stopped. living here, it was just, we went for walks. It was really quiet. I just got loads and loads of things made and done. And I think it just gave me the confidence to just, you know, develop my own practice more and be more kind of honest about what I wanted to do and true to myself. So, it, yeah, I didn't feel like I had to kind of please anybody or do anything. And so I really enjoyed it. I just was very productive and got lots done. And I started selling things about that time on Instagram, and that worked really well for me, actually. So it was a really positive period in my making, and it's led to, you know, quite a lot of other things that have been going on. Good and bad.
yeah, but that's wonderful to hear that you had a good experience with it as well. I think probably also because your kids are a little bit older.
Yeah, we were lucky. We didn't have any older relations that we had to kind of look after or worry about. And the children, our kids were older and, you know, pretty, you know, they managed pretty well, you know, in the situation. So we didn't have too many anxieties about other people. And so we just kind of got on with, you know, tried to make the most of it really in a positive way.
So you sell your work on Instagram, and then you also do a lot of open studio tours, art walks, craft shows, a lot of group shows. How did that all begin for you?
I've got a couple of friends who live in a couple of hours away in a different national park, but I've got a very good friend called Angela Hall, who's a printmaker and a ceramicist. And she's got this beautiful farm in Yorkshire, in the middle of nowhere, really. And we started having a few kind of group open studio events up at her farm, and they've proved really popular. So we've been doing sort of maybe two or three of those a year. And then as I've started to get more established and have more of a body of work, well, actually, for the first time this year, I entered a few like open exhibitions and that sort of thing. Which was really exciting for me because I've not really done that before, and got, you know, a few pieces of work got accepted into different things. So I think I had three or four different exhibitions going on over the summer. Not exhibitions entirely of my own work, but I had things in exhibitions. So that was good. And yeah, arts festivals. I've just taken part in something called Worksworth Art and Architectural Trail, which is a fantastic event around here in Derbyshire. So lots of people host in their own houses artists. So I went to somebody else's house and just had a little kind of exhibition in their hallway and in their music room. So I had this room with a harp. This woman was a musician. So there's a piano, a harpsichord, all these musical instruments, and all my glass hanging around on the walls and on the windows. So that was really great, actually. It's a really lovely event, and met lots of interesting people, and yeah, sold quite a lot of work and got lots of, you know, a few commissions and things from it as well. So that was great. So it's been busy, really busy time over the summer.
Do you do a lot of commissions, right? Isn't most of your work based in commission?
It's a mixture, really. I mean, really, I prefer just kind of making my own stuff and just making things and selling it. But as a result of that, I get people asking me for, you know, going back and seeing stuff on Instagram and saying, I really like that. Can you do that? But maybe change it slightly, or, you know, make it special for, you know, the person I want to give it to. But I do. I've got quite a few commissions for more architectural work. So I've just installed something today, which was a panel for a door. And I've got another couple of things like that in the pipeline to try and get done by Christmas. So a mixture. I do like to have a bit of a variety. So I like to make small things that I can just sell, bigger kind of design projects, and a bit of teaching and that sort of thing. So I like to mix it up, really. I get bored quite quickly, I think. So I like to have different things on the go. Yeah.
I feel like we all need to have different things just because, you know, you can't just do it. You kind of have to mix it up.
Well, also it's about yeah, making money as well, isn't it? You know, you've got to fund your practice as well. So you've got to do some things which are more commercial, which, you know, brings in a bit of money, and other things which are more self-indulgent.
Right.
So a bit of variety. Yeah.
As for your teaching, it looks like you have three different options. You have a half-day workshop where you can make your own rondelle. And then I thought this was really interesting. In the class, they cut and paint it, and then you fire it up and let it, and then you mail it back to them.
Yeah, I've done it a bit. I have not actually run it as a proper course, this one. I did it for some friends over COVID, actually. But yes, I just thought people really enjoy the glass painting side of things. And I thought it was a really good sort of little introduction to, I'm going to show them how to cut glass, but I'm going to help them because it's not that much time in half a day, obviously. I'm going to have some stuff pre-cut as well. And then they can have a play, a bit of an explore with some mark making, some traditional kind of tracing. And yeah, and then I've made so many small rondels now, I can make them up pretty quickly now. So, I thought it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I'll just try new things to offer to people, you know.
It's a great format because I think it also skips some of the steps that I've found are the most frustrating for students. Like soldering can be really frustrating if you don't get it immediately, which rarely anybody gets it immediately. So yeah, I was like, oh, that's so smart. Just doing the glass and then she can just finish it up and send it on back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not everybody wants to do that, or it's an opportunity for them just to say, to try it out and to see whether it's something they want to pursue and maybe come back and do, you know, a 2-day course or, you know, a 3-day course or develop it further. Yeah. I've just done a course a couple of weeks ago at Hull Minster, which is, it's like a cathedral. You know, I don't know if you have Minsters in America. So we did glass painting and they cut out and painted their designs. And I've brought them all back here to fire. And then I'm going back on Friday for them to lead them all back up together and, you know, finish them off. So they've had a bit of a 2-week gap in between, but it should be good.
Yeah. So you have a 2-day stained glass and painting workshop, and then you also have the 3-day. The 3-day is the same format as the 2-day course, but with an extra day for glass painting on day 2. The extra day gives you the opportunity to build texture and layers with a second glass firing.
That's right. Yes. I think it's really hard when you're learning glass painting because, I mean, the way I work is you're constantly firing things. You're building up different layers. You know, some of the pieces of glass have got maybe 4 or 5 firings on them. And so when you're limited just to trying to teach everything in one go and people get one opportunity to fire their glass, it's quite limiting. So having that extra day allows you to fire some line work and then you can paint on top of that and be quite experimental. And then you've got, you know, another, or add some enamel or some silver stain, refire it before you actually have to assemble it. So that worked really well last time. Yeah, it's I think really actually 4 days would be even better. So maybe I'll do that next year.
How many people can take your class at the same time?
I usually have about 6 or 7. I'm sort of limited because I have quite a big kiln, but if you want to try and fire everything overnight so they can come back the next day and put it together, there's obviously a finite amount of space. So 6 or 7 seems to work quite well. So that's what I usually have.
And what's your favorite part about teaching?
More recently, I've just made some really great relationships with people, actually. I've had a couple of people who, mostly I've met them through Instagram, a couple of people who've come to several of my courses. And as for me, I think because I'm living out in the countryside and working by myself, it's actually really lovely to meet other artists, you know, whether they're printmakers or illustrators. It's just really nice to have that opportunity to, you know, it's a two-way thing, isn't it? I'm showing them my skills, but you know, you get a lot in return as well, and made some really good friendships with people who I, you know, stay connected with now, you know, through social media. So I mean, for example, I somebody who has been twice, she's a textile artist, but you know, she, her work applied really well to glass, and she's got a big exhibition at the moment in London. I think it's just finished, and then she's moving up to show it in North Yorkshire. But we, you know, we're keeping in touch, and when we talk about our process as well, it's very similar. We're just working with different mediums. So yeah, I really, really enjoy, you know, I enjoy working with other people, meeting new people.
Have you taught your daughters?
One of them has done a little bit. Yes, she's done several things. And over COVID, her and her friends, she lived in a big shared house and they were all bored all the time. So that's where I had the idea. I sent them all pieces of Arundel, and they painted them and then sent them back to me. But yes, she's done a few things, and she's just bought a house, and she's got quite a lot of bits of stained glass everywhere, either made by myself or by her. Yeah. So
that's so sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about a couple of your pieces specifically. You don't really have names for your pieces.
No, I don't really. No. If I do, it's usually an afterthought, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, you make a lot of these glass girls.
Yeah.
They're really sweet. They have, some of them have animals. Some of them have little birds or little dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. The little figures, you mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things I did, actually. I made some of those, and I hung them in my greenhouse here. And my daughter said, oh, you should sell those on Instagram. And I was like, really? I don't think anybody's going to want to buy these. And anyway, I did. I put them just on my grid and sold them all really quickly, which was what gave me the, you know, the real incentive to sort of think about what I was doing, and that actually it did have some sort of value.
Yeah.
So I made these little figures. Yeah. And the first one I sold, I think, was to New York. And that was just, you know, very exciting because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. She was like, well, how much is it going to cost it? And I'm like, I don't know. £10? No.
So what did you do? Did she pay for the shipping afterwards, or did she just pay like?
No, she got a bargain. She got a bargain, I think.
Yep. And then that's happened to me before too. Yeah. I've shipped things overseas and then be like, that was a mistake, but okay. Yeah. I learned a lesson.
Yeah. But it was a good, isn't it? It's all a journey, isn't it? You're kind of finding things out as you go along. But yeah, so I started off making those little characters, and again, I was just having fun making something that I wanted to make, using some sort of quite experimental sort of mark making and just messing around, really. So it was nice that people liked them and wanted to buy them. Yeah, so that got me kind of started on the whole Instagram selling thing.
Is there a backstory to your characters?
To be perfectly honest, I think, again, going back to sort of loosening up and being kind of just allowing yourself to be creative, what I tend to do is I doodle. I have a sketchbook with me most evenings, and I'm just, whilst I'm watching TV or listening to music, I just draw things. And I often go back through all my books and I take photographs of some of the images that I've drawn. And then I kind of work those up to, you know, become sort of stained glass designs. I don't really know where they come from. I just... I don't know, really. I suppose they're all self-portraity sort of things, me and my dog, and, you know, inspired by kind of countryside and the marks and the flora and fauna and all that sort of thing. They haven't got a specific tale behind them, to be perfectly honest.
None of them are named. You don't have Sue and Anne.
No. They're just girls.
And then you also have your glass men. Is that what you call
them? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made some again, that was another thing that quite early on, I'd made some little kind of faces, like some green men faces. Yeah, they kind of were just very popular very quickly. And again, I think, I suppose I'm thinking of them as little kind of sort of symbols, little effigies to protect, you know, to protect you. Maybe it was a sort of thing to do with COVID, but they were kind of almost like little talisman to, you know, Mother Nature, the Green Man. They're all about kind of trying to preserve the landscape and the creatures within it. And the, you know, it's very disheartening, isn't it, the world at the moment and all the politics. And I suppose it's just kind of trying to invent and create these little, yeah, these little tokens that maybe have, you know, some power to do something we can't do. Yeah, I really like also the sort of traditions of the countryside. I don't know if you've heard of well dressing, which is something that happens around here. I used to be quite involved with it. I mean, I don't come from Derbyshire, but I got kind of hooked into making it. So every summer, and it's a pagan kind of thing, really. And it's they get these big wooden boards and they fill them with clay. And then you make a mosaic using natural materials, which you press into the clay. So you can use seeds, moss, flower petals, all sorts of things. So you make this big kind of picture using all these natural materials. And then they're displayed in the village for a week. And originally they were there to thank the gods or God for the water, for clean water. They had a lot of bubonic plague around here in the medieval times. So it was, I think partly to do with that, but it was like a sort of thanksgiving to, to nature for the clean water and for the harvest and all this sort of thing. So some of these well dressings are very elaborate. Each village has one and they all have them at a slightly different time of the summer, over the summer. And it's quite an interesting tradition that's very, I don't think there's any other county. I think it is just this particular area that has this. So it's quite unique and it's quite a skill. And it's one of those things that's dying out, really. So it's a nice thing to be able to sort of help preserve it and to keep it going.
So who gets to make the boards? Is it anybody that wants to make one and they provide the supplies, or is it just like the artists of the community?
Well, there's just one big board. Okay. And ours is, so it's about a meter by a meter, so it's quite big. Sometimes they have like a kind of little bit of a roof on it or like a sort of side panels. So these big boards, the community works together to do it. It gets, first of all, it has to be soaked in the river, all the boards, so that they become really wet. So that when you put the clay in, the clay stays wet. And then you spend a week. So ours takes place in the village hall here and the school children are involved and anybody else who wants to come and help. And everybody comes and just does a little bit and it all creates this beautiful kind of mosaic. And there used to be religious themes, but now the themes are all sorts of different things. They could be, to do with like the climate change or some, you know, anniversary of some, you know, a lot of people did because it was the Queen's Jubilee. Well dressings that were relevant to that. So it's the themes vary considerably.
Are you a royalist?
No.
Is that considered a personal question?
Well, I think it's been quite the Queen's death affected a lot of people, I think. And I think sometimes I had to be a little bit careful about what I say because, you know, people were very upset about it. To me, I wasn't particularly upset. Well, I mean, she did an amazing job, but I'm not royalist, no. And I don't believe, I think hopefully things will change in the future. Interestingly, I mean, where I used to live in Ascot, which is near Windsor Castle, and my mum was a great royalist. We always used to get dragged out to go and see the Queen as she went up to Ascot races and, Yeah, but no.
Yeah.
Not particularly.
I think it might be kind of just, is it similar to just asking somebody like their politics? Like, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Where it's not necessarily a personal question, but during this time, it feels a little sensitive.
Yeah, I was surprised at how many people were really affected by it. So you have to tread carefully, because I didn't want to upset people, but right. Personally, not particularly into the royal family.
It's so interesting, the whole thing, the history, how it works, how it doesn't work. The whole thing is just, it's so interesting.
Yeah. I think a lot of Americans are really into it, aren't they?
And yeah.
It's going to be interesting, because we've got the king's coronation next year. And, you know, Great Britain's going through quite a lot of problems at the moment with cost of living crisis. And so you've got these two very polar things going on. And I was listening to something on the radio about it today, and they were saying, you know, I think he's thinking that he's going to sort of dumb it down a bit and make it not quite so exuberant, because it's, you know, billions of pounds being spent on something where people can't afford to heat their homes at the moment. You know, it's very polarized.
Mm-hmm. It's a little tone deaf to throw a huge, crazy event for it. Yeah.
But then some people are saying, well, we live in miserable times. We really want this, because we're only going to see one coronation in our lifetime and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm sure there'll be a lot of pomp and ceremony anyway, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why they wait an entire year for the coronation of the king?
I don't know.
I thought that was
odd. Suppose it takes a lot of planning, but
isn't it true? That is true. Yeah, if you think about it, like how long it takes to plan a wedding, a year is actually just
about.
But
they would have had it all planned in advance anyway, they wouldn't they? You know, they have a model, they know what they're going to be doing. So
they already have the venue booked.
Yeah, exactly. They know who's going to be there. They have all the costumes and the jewelry.
Yes. Yeah, the uniform has been chosen. Well, okay, back to glass. You have also two pieces that also are a nod to nature, the Queen of Green and the Corn Dolly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just,
they're so sweet. I love them so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the Corn Dolly was quite, well, again, that's another sort of, not so much in Derbyshire, but, you know, a very folksy kind of thing in Britain, you know, making these little figures out of, you know, woven corn. And also there's a tradition with like Morris dancing. I don't know if you're aware of Morris dancers. Again, it's a sort of like a folk dancing done to sort of folk music. And there's, so that was a bit of an inspiration for those sorts of things, you know, with the sort of like the mask on the face. And again, they're kind of like rituals, and they're based on, you know, sort of more countryside. I wouldn't necessarily say pagan, but, you know, kind of celebrating nature and traditions of the countryside. So, yeah, we have a lot of, so Morris dancing. So there's mostly a male thing, but there are quite a lot of female troupes as well now. So I got a bit of inspiration from that, but also from the idea of this corn dolly. Yeah, so it's just sort of feeding some of these kind of British traditions into some of the things that I do.
And the Queen of Green, is there a specific tradition that she's...
I can't remember which one you mean by that. Was it a face one or a figure?
Here she is.
Oh, that one. Yeah. I've made that one a few times. It's very popular. Yeah, again, a sort of a green goddess, a sort of a protector of, you know, I suppose somebody who's just trying to kind of, a talisman, somebody who's just trying to kind of protect us a bit from everything that's going on with the climate and with the, you know, destruction of the landscape, you know, putting a little bit of hope into some of these kind of characters that, again, like talismans to try and make things a bit better.
Yeah. There's another tradition, another festival actually, that I think is where you live. You have it in your stories, but it's like a garland hanging ceremony.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The Castleton Garland. Yeah. That was the first time I've been to it this year, actually. I've been aware of it, but I think it was back in May I went to see it. And it's another one of these. It kind of has links to, like, you know, I was explaining about the well dressing. It's a similar sort of thing. This whole kind of garland is made out of fresh flowers. Then it's pulled up. It's really, really heavy. So it's pulled up with a rope and then put over the head of a man on horseback and paraded through the village. On the way, they stop off at 8 pubs in the village and have a drink at each one. So this poor man on the, I don't think he can have a drink because I think he's completely enclosed in this, you know, dome of flowers. But there's dancing going on. There's like dancing girls, and everybody wears, an oak leaf in their lapel. I think it's Oak Apple Day, which they're celebrating. So they kind of parade through the village, and then at the end, this big thing is sort of hoisted off him, and it's taken up into the bell tower of the church in Castleton. It's a tradition. I'm not completely sure of all the history connected to it, but it's a tradition that's been going on for many years, and it's quite a quirky, interesting thing to go and see, definitely.
I love all these ceremonies and traditions. So is he's not holding it up. It's wrapped around him, but it's like draped over the horse as well, I suppose.
It's kind of like a bell shape, and it's kind of, I don't know whether it's sort of like resting on his head or it completely encompasses whole, you know, the whole top half of his body. So I don't think his arms stick out. I think he's led on the horse. Somebody said, I know somebody in the village who he films it every year, and he said it was something to do with chimney sweeps used to create these kind of garlands and cover themselves up and make themselves into these kind of like human garlands. And they used to sort of dance around the streets to get money. And it was apparently they used to do it, you know, because it was seasonal, their work. So they used to do it presumably in the summer when they didn't have so much work to try and get some money to, you know, pay for whatever they needed to pay for. But it's all a bit of a mishmash, I think, of traditions. There isn't really a definite sort of reason why it happens. I think it's all sorts of different customs which have all been kind of slightly sort of melded together, which create this. But it's definitely really interesting and definitely worth going to see if you're in Castleton in May, whenever it is. I can't remember the exact date. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth going to see.
You also made a piece that's like a lion face. It's very similar in shape, but it's the sweetest lion face. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so. Is it a tiger, actually?
Oh, it's a tiger. I thought it was a lion because he sort of has like the rays going around him. So I thought that was his.
I think it's a tiger. So I belong to an organization called the Contemporary Glass Society. I don't know if you've heard of that. And every couple of years they have a like an exhibition at the International Festival of Glass. And the theme this year was to make a piece of glass that represented a country from the Commonwealth. So I've got a mask upstairs, which is an Indian tiger mask. So I used that as the inspiration for making the little piece. So in these cabinets, I had all these different, everything has to be, I think it was like 10 centimeters. So it was just quite a nice thing to be involved with, and all the different postcards, although mine was round, not square, all represented different countries in the Commonwealth. So it was just quite a fun thing to do.
It was so precious. Yeah. Loved it. Oh,
thank you.
I'm just naming all these pieces because when I went into your Instagram, I was like, I want to, you know, find a favorite piece and talk with her specifically about that one. But I kept finding them and then being like, oh, this is my favorite. And then I'd write something down about it. And then I'd scroll a little deeper and be like, nope, this is my favorite. The next one that is another favorite of mine is it's a mermaid, but it's also a dog mermaid, a dog maid, a puppy maid.
That was actually somebody asked me to make that. I'd made a piece, this is what happens, so I'd made a mermaid little panel for an exhibition, and somebody had seen it, and she has a dachshund that likes swimming, and so she asked me to make a dog mermaid. So these are the sorts of things. In fact, actually, for the same lady, I'm having to do another one, I think, and also a cat version of it as well, which I haven't got around to making yet. But
well, I know what those are called. Those are called permaids.
Brilliant. So yeah, I do get some odd requests for things, but yes, it was quite cute actually, wasn't it? Yeah,
very cute. We have a whole thing in our family where we told my daughter when she was very little that I used to be a mermaid before I met her dad, and I've decided to become a human to be with him. So a little bit of a take on the Little Mermaid, but like, you know, a much better version. I don't know. But over the years, she's seven now and she still thinks it's true. So over the years, this story has grown and evolved. And she's asked me like very specific questions about like what school was like for me when I was little. And, you know, what were my friends like? Did I know any crabs? Things like that. And so, and it has grown so much bigger than what it initially intended to be or do that I feel like it's gotten very complex. I have a tattoo on my back that she thinks is like the sign of a mermaid. If she sees anybody else that has that same tattoo. I mean,
she thinks that they're also one. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. She thinks she's going to turn into a mermaid when she turns 18. So she has a lot of questions about that too. Like, will she have power to move water or, you know, any other superpowers that come with it? Will I be with her when she turns into a mermaid? Will it be when she touches any water? It's a whole thing, but mermaids have become very, very special for us. And I'm not sure if she's going to hate me when she realizes that it's all not true and just be like, I can't believe you lied all those years about the mermaid thing, or if she'll appreciate it.
Well, I made quite a lot of little mermaid rondels because we had a group of friends here and we still do it, but we've been swimming in the river going out and it gets quite cold where we live here. But in January, we swam every day in January. So some days it was 1 degree, the water temperature.
Oh my God.
It was quite a challenge. And at the end, I made everybody a little rumble with the mermaid in to celebrate the fact that we did it for a month.
So how far did you swim?
Oh, we didn't swim very far, but it was more just actually the act of getting in the water when it was so cold. We end sometimes literally in and straight out again. Mm-hmm. It was quite challenging.
You also, let's see here. You did a door piece. This is the last one, I promise. Last favorite. Okay. You did a door piece that I think it's a dove. I'm not sure if it's actually a dove or not, but then there's a big one and then there's some birds that are swirling up and over to the right corner.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yes. That was something that I made for a friend of mine actually. And I've just been around there today to install another window in her house. The birds around here are wonderful. And I think the one that you're talking about is based on the murmurations that we have here. So in the winter we get millions and millions of starlings that roost up in the reed beds on top of the hill. Oh. And they do this murmurating. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yes. They have that in Portland, Oregon every year where they do like a tornado down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So the last couple of years, it's been amazing. So we walk up at dusk and you can see all these bird kind of formations. It's really incredible. So that was kind of slightly based on that. But yes, we have so many. I mean, our house looks over some fields and we get loads of owls. We get lots of buzzards. We get all sorts of amazing bird life here, actually. So that was, just trying to... just trying to use some of those images to create a kind of stylized panel, really. And I've just saved to the same person today. I've just installed big owl panel, which I don't know if you've seen. It's on my Instagram today. So yeah, there's definitely a bird theme going on with all my work as well.
So it's not a dove, yeah. It's a starling.
I think so. If it's the one, yeah. It's a kind of, you know, it's
ambiguous.
It's based on that, yeah. It's ambiguous, yeah. It's my own version of a bird of some sort. I've decided not to be too literal about things anymore. It's just whatever. It's
tiger, lion, starling, dove.
Yeah.
Is a buzzard the same thing as or is it very similar to a vulture?
It's not as big as a vulture. It's a bird of prey, but it's not as big as a vulture.
Okay.
No. It's you get them quite common here. You get them in pairs often, and we live, there's a limestone ridge, and you get them kind of circling around looking for prey. So they're beautiful birds.
I don't think I've ever seen a buzzard in real life. When I think of a buzzard, I think of like the cartoon version.
Yeah, we did have a vulture here once. I think we had one vulture, which was it's a European bird. We had a bearded vulture, and one came to visit. I think it was last year or the year before, and it was incredible. Loads of bird watchers from all over the country came to get a sighting of this because it was really rare to see them in the UK. So this bearded vulture was sort of flying around not too far from here. So it was I never saw it, but it caused quite a lot of excitement.
Just all by himself? Was he lost?
Yeah, all by himself. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He'd just gone rogue.
I saw that you did a stained glass tour in London. Is this an ongoing thing? Because I'm going to be in London in July, and I was very interested to see you did that.
Okay, so I have a little book which is by somebody called Caroline Swash. Mm. And she has produced this little tiny kind of guide, and within it there are like five or six, and maybe more actually, different kind of walks you can do around London, taking in kind of contemporary and, you know, church stained glass. So it's a really nice thing to do if you're in London. Yeah. So I can send it to you if you.
That's very sweet of you. I'll find it. You don't have to mail it to me, but I'm very interested in doing that because I feel like I should probably do something like that when I'm in London. There's so much good stained glass there.
Yeah. When are you coming in this year?
July. Mm-hmm, in July.
Yeah. Next year. Okay. Yeah. The Southwark Cathedral is amazing. I mean, there's some really beautiful, beautiful, and some very old and interesting stained glass all over London, really. I'm trying to remember the name of the pub. Anyway, I'll send you a link to it. There's a pub which has got, you know, beautiful stained glass windows of all these sporting characters. I think it's called the Champion or something. It's everywhere. It's beautiful. You'll have a great time.
I can't wait. The last time I was in London was in 2005, I want to say. I'll have to fact check that. The day that I was supposed to get into London was my birthday. It was July 8th. And it was the same day that there were those bombings in London.
Okay.
And so while I was there, they wouldn't let any vehicles, any, you know, trains, nothing near any of the important buildings. So there's a lot of history that I need to see and make up for from that trip.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, there's also, I mean, it's such a great city. It's, you know, there's always really good exhibitions to go and see at the Tate Gallery or, you know, things at the British Museum. There's so much to do.
I can't wait. And it's the first time I'm taking my daughter abroad. And it's the first time.
Yeah, oh, really?
Seen. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she'll love it. It's so cool.
It's so cool. I think she's really going to enjoy it. I can't wait. She's, that's definitely something that I feel like, you know, she's seven and she's really, you know, you have two daughters, like she's very powerful and she's really experimenting right now with like control and there's a lot of friction. Sometimes she's pushing back against me in a lot of different ways, but we travel a lot. And whenever we travel, she and I, we travel together so well and we get along so well. And she's such a great little helper on trips. So I'm excited for this big one for us.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. Well, we did lots of travelling with our children when they were young, and it's such a great thing to do. And we've got so many brilliant memories of things that we did together. And they still like coming on holiday with us if we pay, I think. It's,
that always helps.
Yeah.
Okay, so you teach classes, you sell your work, you're doing these art walks and in festivals, etc. And then I saw that you were also making these owl greeting cards from your popular owl series. How are those doing?
So again, I was telling you earlier about my friend Angela Hall and about how we have these open studios. So it was just a chance to, a lot of the things I make are individual, they're one-offs, or maybe they are slightly different, you know, but nothing's ever exactly the same. Mm. I could never be one of these people who had a shop and said, you know, I don't want to be repeating making the same things all the time. So I think cards was just a way of, yeah, just kind of making the most of some of those images that I've made and having the opportunity to, you know, sell something and have something a little bit different, because not everybody has the money to be able to buy a piece of stained glass, but they might like to buy a few cards. So yeah, that's been really good. I did some of my green men as well. I made those into cards. I don't do a lot of it because I'm not very organized and I don't have an online shop, and I need to get, you know, I need to get better at my kind of website and that sort of thing. So I just have these cards for when I do events and that sort of thing. But yeah, they're quite popular. So I'll probably make some more for the next. I've got a few things coming up in the autumn and winter. So I'll probably maybe look at some of my new work and get some cards made. I'm also thinking about getting maybe some prints made of some things as well, for the same reason. You know, somebody might not want to spend the money on a piece of glass, but they might like the image and want to buy a print of it. So that's possibly something to do.
Very smart. Do you have a favorite project that you've done? They really are so different, all of them.
Interesting. Well, like I say, I think I just always like the next one best, probably. As soon as something's been made, I'm not really very interested in it anymore. So it's, you know, because I'm thinking about what I'm going to do next, and yeah, I get excited about, you know, the next thing that I'm going to do. So I've got a transom window, like a panel above a door, that I'm going to be doing next for somebody. So I'm starting to think about that, and that's going to be based on birds and landscape, and some people, again, who live quite locally and they want something that reflects the kind of area a little bit, but they're quite happy for me to make it to my own design. So that's really nice. I enjoy, you know, being given that freedom to make something that I want to make, but it's going to go into a particular space. So
do you do your own installations?
Not really. No. I recognise I'm not very good at that sort of thing. So I'm hesitating, because I've been round today to my friend Lorna's, and we've been trying to get this window set up and fitted into this door panel. So sometimes a little bit, but yeah, usually I try and leave it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. It's not like, again, you recognise that you what you can do and what you're good at doing. I'm not very good at doing that. It's like repairs and all that sort of thing. I'm not particularly good at doing that. So I've just learned now that I can say no to those sorts of things and stick to what I feel I'm better at doing.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to learn that the hard way?
Yeah, because I always say yes, usually, to everybody for everything. And yeah, it comes with kind of more confidence, doesn't it, to actually say, that's not, you know, that's not me. No, I don't want to do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you sign your work?
How do I sign it? Sometimes I forget to sign it.
Oh, no.
No. I usually just put JL 2022, just paint it in or scratch it into a little section in the corner when I make something. Yeah. I'm terrible. I'm really rubbish at remembering to do things like this, because I get so excited about doing the thing and I'm in such a rush to do it, but I forget all the things I should try and remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's an easy thing to do. It's an easy little detail to forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only other thing that I wrote down for you is what you wrote under a photo that was posted a long time ago, and it just made me laugh. You wrote, "This is me from yonks ago when I made some panels with kids from a school in North Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought that was so funny. This is me from yonks ago. Is that a saying?
Yeah. Yonks ago. A long time ago. Yeah. When I first started doing stained glass, I did a lot of projects with schools. And I can't remember exactly which picture you're talking about, but yeah, I did a lot of that. So I would work with kids and we would be, you know, making design. Sometimes they would do the glass painting as well. It all depended on the time and what we were doing, but I did a lot of that sort of thing. And again, that's one of the things that I probably have learned to say no to doing quite so often. Just so I have, only because I would rather spend time making my own work really rather than those sorts of projects. But again, I do them from time to time still.
Yeah. Well, that one was yonks ago.
You never heard of yonks ago?
Never heard of it, but it's my new favorite way to describe when something was a very long time ago. Do you have a favorite artist that's not stained glass?
That's not stained glass. Well, I really like people like Matisse and Picasso. I mean, contemporary artists. I really like one of the things I was thinking about. I was, do you know Vicky and Bill Lindo? I don't know if you know them. They're kind of ceramicists from, I think they're from London. Look at their Instagram. They have some really beautiful, they make these beautiful ceramic kind of, often they're quite figurative, cats and different sorts of kind of creatures. Really beautiful. I think very collectible now.
And what are their names?
Vicky and Bill Lindo, L-I-N-D-O. I really like, at the moment, I'm really into medieval art. I really love going around churches and cathedrals and looking at the sort of, you know, the medieval kind of wood carvings and stained glass windows and stone carvings and gargoyles. I really love all that sort of stuff. I've got quite eclectic tastes. I like all sorts of things. I love going to galleries in London, you know, and well, wherever. I love going and looking at art and going to museums, but I do especially like going to churches and cathedrals. I'm not religious, but I love all the craftsmanship in these spaces. Like I said, I was saying I'm working at Holminster at the moment, which has got an incredible range of stained glass from all over the, you know, all over time. They have some Harry Stammers windows. He's somebody else I really like. He's somebody, he was from North Yorkshire and sort of born about 1906 or something like that and worked through to like the 1960s. But he's got some beautiful work all over Great Britain. So he's one of my favourite stained glass artists.
Do you have any modern stained glass artists that you love that you want to give a nod to?
Well, I've got do you know what? There's just loads and loads of amazing stained glass artists who, again, have got sort of relationships with through Instagram. It's such a supportive community, actually. And there are a lot of women working, you know, as glass painters or so, yeah, we all kind of, I think it's really great. We, you know, they're very supportive and we ask each other kind of questions. We've got little sort of WhatsApp groups and that sort of thing. I mean, I really love, well, one of the people I really love, actually, and I was going to talk about her, is Cappy Thompson, who's an American artist, actually. She was, do you know Cappy? When I first started doing stained glass, I did a workshop, a masterclass with her. She's from Seattle.
Did you come over or did you just do it online?
So she came over to Scotland to teach it. Her work is really inspiring. She does a lot of glass painting. And yeah, that was kind of quite a important time for me, really, learning from her. I was looking at it today. I think the course was called Developing Your Own Personal Iconography. Her stuff is quite illustrative and quite spiritual, and also quite folk art based. And yeah, really beautiful work, actually. She's done some really big installations in airports and things. I think, is it Tacoma Airport? Is that in Seattle? So she's a contemporary glass artist that I really like. But there's lots of British, lots and lots. Yeah.
I know. There is. There's way more, I think. It seems that there's more glass painting happening in England than there is here.
Really?
What do you think?
I mean, I follow a lot of accounts, and a lot of them are British, actually. Yes. I mean, I follow people from all over the world, I guess, but yeah, it seems to be very, popular. I mean, when I run courses, people are really interested in it as a medium, and there's some just extraordinary people doing some interesting, really interesting things. You know, some very traditional work, but some people doing very, taking it in all different directions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what are your 5 to 10 year goals?
I think so. One of the things, very practically, is I'm going to, at the moment I work in my, it's an old outside toilet and garage. So one of my practical goals is to actually create a better sort of studio space for myself, because it's cold, it's kind of rat infested, it's not the best at all. But I'd like to enter more kind of competitions and exhibitions. Every couple of years here, they have this, this International Festival of Glass, and they have quite a prestigious sort of Biennale exhibition. And there was quite a lot of stained glass represented this year. So maybe I'd like to try and get something in something like that in the future. So I think, again, it's about making time for myself. So doing the work I want to do and being a bit experimental and giving myself that time to just kind of develop my own ideas, my own kind of creativity.
Yeah.
So that's really, and not be trying to please everybody else, I suppose.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, you've just said it out loud publicly, so now you have to do it.
Well, I've got 2 years, so I'll have to start thinking about it. Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll keep us updated on Instagram.
I will do.
Okay. Yeah. Please do. Well, that's all I have for today. So,
I wanted to tell you one person, actually, because, so I have this person I wanted to just sort of mention, because you have to nominate. What did you say, to nominate somebody?
Well, it's not necessarily a nomination anymore. Now it's just like, who do you want to like shine a light on and say,
there is somebody. Yeah, there's a young woman called Lily Eris. I think that's how you pronounce her name. And also, I think her mother is also a stained glass artist called Liz Hubbard. They're both on Instagram. So Lily is, she's just won a cockpit clear bursary. And so she's just left university, I think. Don't really know very much about her, but her work's very illustrative. She does a lot of sgraffito, really into glass painting, and it's very kind of unique and personal to her. So her work's just really interesting for somebody. She's very much sort of, just new to, up and coming, I suppose. She's just finished her course. So I just wanted to kind of give a shout out to her because her work's really lovely.
Okay. And her mom, what's her mom's name?
Her mom's called Liz Huppert.
Okay.
I think that's how you say it. She also does some really beautiful glass painting as well. So that's quite interesting that the daughters, so my daughters weren't that, apart from doing it for a bit of fun, weren't really interested in pursuing it. But obviously Lily's taken the leaf out of mother's book and producing some really nice work.
That's nice. That's really nice. Well, Jane, you are just as lovely to chat with as your work is. I'm so grateful that you spent your time, your afternoon with me today. And have a wonderful and productive day in the studio today, and I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you very much, Siobhan. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
To see more of Jane's work, her Instagram is at jane.littlefield.glass. jane.littlefield.glass. And mine is at Runa Glassworks. For the Cracked Patreon page, Jane is gifting one of her blackbird eating a worm small sun catcher pieces that's about 9 centimeters or just about 3.5 inches, and also a pack of 5 owl rondelle greeting cards. So, so cute. I'll be doing a drawing for that in my Instagram stories on Sunday, January 29th, 2023. Speaking of Patreon, I'd like to also take a moment to thank this podcast's newest Patreon supporters. Consider this shout out a little forehead kiss and a big hug and thank you from not only me, but from everyone else listening too. The Patreon page is a big percentage of the fuel that keeps this train going. So here we go. Kelly Graves of at Glass Wench Studio. Sheila Wagner at dusk_glass. Isabel at Can't Be Glassed. Elizabeth Crutcher, Sunbath Glass. Abigail Rudgens at Abigail Rudgens. Brett Kern at Brett Kern Art. Jeremy Bosher at Bosher1277. Tyler August at The Glass Troll. Jenna Meager Smith at Functionally Yours. Ed Daisy. Sarah Schofield at Schofield Studio. Arista at Arista Artworks, Beth Lowe, and Erica Westfall. And that's all for today, folks. Next week's episode of Cracked is pretty cool because I'll be chatting with two artists who I admire and whose work I love, Australian Nadine Keegan and Austrian Tom Medicus. Nadine is on the road for a fellowship study, and I was lucky to catch them together at the same time. Till then, my friends, I hope you all have wonderful and productive days in the studio. Bye!